Good morning and welcome to our meeting. It is 9 a.m. on November 21, 2023, and time to convene a regular meeting of the Snohomish County PUD Board of Commissioners. I'm Rebecca Wolf, President of the Commission. Here today, we have Commissioner Sid Logan, Vice President, Commissioner Tony Olson, Secretary, John Harlow, CEO, General Manager, Colin Willenbrock, General Counsel, Melissa Collins, Mission and Executive Services Director, Allison Morrison, Clerk of the Board, and Morgan Stolzner, Deputy Clerk of the Board. The written record will indicate others who are present. Please mute or turn off your cell phones or other electronic devices. This session is for the Board and CEO General Manager to discuss, to study and discuss issues among ourselves and with PUD staff. Welcome, John, and I'll turn it over to you, sir.
Good morning, Commissioners. We've got lots of fun stuff to go through this morning, so we'll jump right to it. First off, in your packet, you had the government or legislative report, and we have our fantastic government relations team here to answer any questions.
I don't think I have any questions yet. I did appreciate it. I always appreciate the great job that they do on that.
Well, I highlighted something, but now I can't remember why.
I highlighted the great work of getting that helicopter out of the lake.
Oh, yes. Yes.
A great piece of work, so.
Yes.
Concerned. I don't know how fuel stays in a tank underwater indefinitely.
Well, there was some sheen on the surface.
I'm not surprised.
But I don't think that much.
Good. I'm thrilled.
Good work on the phone with PUD on putting those rooms out to catch anything that might, good work.
Yeah, the team responded well and collaborated and coordinated well with the other agencies.
Right.
Successful outcome. Okay. Next up, we wanted to share with the commission an update on the outage map and how it performed and some of the things that the new things that are going on from our last storm. And we have Cassidy Warren with us to talk through that. Good morning, Cassidy.
Hey, how's it going? Up the podium.
Howdy, howdy.
How are you? This is my very first meeting ever here.
Well, we're going to give you a real bad time.
I hope so. Great. So my name is Cassidy Warren. I'm a contractor here tasked with helping out with the outage communications, the outage map that we've been working on for quite some time now. So happy to share. So just a quick overview of the storm that we had. And Aaron, if you want to correct me at all, you can. But we had, this was last weekend. There was about 70 outages, about 18,000 customers out. So it was a relatively small storm event. Sometimes we call that like a serviceman storm, rather than like last November's major storm event. And just as an overview of the changes that we did make to the map for storm, map and text messages, we simplify sort of what we say and the steps that are involved with restoration and how we communicate those to customers. In our text messages to customers that opt in, we provide some expectations for what they can expect in terms of communications that are different than like what we call blue sky or normal day, a normal outage. And that includes things like you're not going to get an ETR right away, right? We just don't have estimated times of restorations right now. But they will now get a text message and an update when a crew is working on their specific job. And so that's probably the biggest change that we came away with working with operations is having our crews be able to update electronically through their tablet when they're working on the job and also provide an ETR at that time. Traditionally, what would happen during storms, large or small, is ETRs would be unavailable for the majority of the storm event until the end when sort of everything's kind of calmed down and we're on our final jobs. And so now essentially every customer will get an ETR once a crew is working on their job.
Text.
What's that?
A text.
Yes, okay. And a text. Yeah, and they can still go to the map too, and it'll be on the map as well.
Okay.
But they will get it through the text message, and it'll say something along the lines of, a crew is now making repairs to your outage. Here's your ETR.
Okay.
So in terms of feedback that we got from customers, because we provide a survey at the end of the outage, they can take about 10% of customers that opt in for the text messages, take the survey, and about half of those customers that take the survey leave us comments. And so we read every single comment. I personally read every single comment along with some of our team members. And number one, the scores are mid to high nines. So it's out of 10, mid to high nines on satisfaction, whether they're gonna opt in again, and how helpful the information was, which is really excellent, actually, coming from negative customer experience around outages. Yes, exactly. And so 75% of the comments that we get are thanking the PUD, thanking our linemen, thanking all the workers, really extraordinary comments from our customers. Some of the things that we learned from this last storm, because it was a smaller serviceman style storm, we are going to make some changes to the first text message that we send out and be able to give a little bit more specifics if it's a smaller type of storm, because we got some feedback from customers that they were expecting more frequent updates, but those may not come in the smaller type of storms. So yeah. Did I miss anything?
Opt-in that it's
that. Oh yeah, thank you. Opt-in rate. So customers have to opt in each time for their outage. Right now we're working on not having to have them do that, and we're averaging about a 75% opt-in rate. So 75% of the customers that report their outage opt in to get the text messages, and they can do that through the map, and they can also do it when they call the phone system. So customers that are staying on the IVR, they are opting in to get text messages on their phone, which is actually really, really cool.
That's huge. Yeah. 75% of the customers that report an outage opted in. Do we know what percentage of customers report an outage?
I don't have that. It's most of the time it's in the 10 to 30%
range.
Okay. Yeah, so 75% of 30% are customers that are receiving text messages.
That's really powerful.
Yeah. Yeah,
great work.
When do you think you'll have it set up so that people don't have to opt in every time?
We're planning to have it ready by storm season next year.
24.
Yeah, so it's a little bit more intricate in the systems that have to tie together to be able to do that. Everything we've built, we'll be able to essentially use and reuse for the what we call proactive. There's just more vendors, people, systems, and technology that have to all tie together to be able to people in and send out the proactive messages. So we're hoping sooner, but we're shooting for before next storm season. So.
So will that be an option in like my neighborhood?
That's right. And through the app, and we're planning on, you know, not just text messages, but push notifications as well through the app.
Wow, that's really cool.
Well, Commissioner Beth, I experienced the change in crews on site, crews working, crews done. 99.9% of the customers that contact me, typically during major storms, that is the one thing that drives them nuts. They say, I would be fine with the power out as long as I know when the crews are going to work, you know, when the crews are working on it, and when I'm going to get my power back.
That's right.
So that's right on.
Yeah, that's really big kudos to our operations team for working with the crews to make that happen. So. And the technology team to bring it back.
Yeah, it's a lot of things to be brought together.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's been my experience too, Commissioner. Customers, they understand why the power goes out and they accept that the power will go out, but it's just wanting to know the expectation of when it might come back on or what's going on, or, you know, especially I think in multiple days, in the bigger outages where it goes a few days and you see some areas come on and some areas not. I think we really learned that in that storm last year.
Yeah.
They really wanted more communications.
That's right. Yeah. And it's really just so that they can make decisions about their lives.
Yeah.
It's frustrating, but, you know, do I need to get a hotel for the night? Do I need to stay with my parents?
Yeah.
Am I going to have a hot shower in the morning? You know, do I need to turn my generator on? Those sorts of things. So we're doing everything that we can to provide that information. And then, you know, even in larger events, we're going to be working on providing more regular updates out to customers so that they can make those decisions. And that's, again, working with our operations team and our corporate communications team to be able to do that.
I'll never forget taking a distance course during a power outage, and we had papers due by certain time on the East Coast. So I was driving around Edmonds trying to find where the lights were on.
Yeah.
And I found a McDonald's that, or no, a Burger King, excuse me.
Yeah.
Burger King, and that's where I filed my paper.
Yeah.
So, you know, you do have to, if you know, or well, even if you don't, if you have a deadline on things,
yeah.
But when I worked for a school district, that was a critical piece of information. First of all, we didn't even know if power was on. We drove by a building, and then the outage map came, and then we could see if power was on.
Yeah.
But then having an expectation, you know, is it going to be back on by 10 in the morning, or is it going to be off for 2 days, right? And so those decisions about whether to have school or not have school, really, power was a huge factor in trying to make that decision.
That's right.
Do we have account reps that do that are assigned to certain categories of debt?
Yeah, the other benefit of being able to opt in on the map each time is that anyone that works for a school district or a large company or anyone that's interested in the outage at that particular location can opt in and get updates.
Yeah.
So it's really useful for everyone, but you know, large
right.
districts and
yeah.
companies. Yeah.
Yeah. It's huge.
And I can understand. Oh, was it my turn?
I'm done.
You're done. Well, I have to be pointed at because I'm always interrupted. I'm on, what would you call it, training? I can clearly understand the need for more time to do the large storms because of the complexity of that and the information that's coming in all over must be tremendous.
Yeah, there's a lot of work going on, especially early on in the storms.
Yeah.
If we're ordering in mutual aid crews, mobilizing materials, getting people out, damage assessing is a big part of the first part, even just understanding how much damage in which locations, and that really determines how much time it's going to take to restore the storm.
We appreciate it all. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you, Cassidy, and it is a huge kudos to the large number of folks that are really have been working on this project and making significant steps to better improve the communication and information we're sending to our customers. It's a big deal. It really is.
And all wait for Connect Up.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. And that'll be another huge step for us as well. All right, next up is an update on the Woods Creek Sustainability Center. Dawn Pressler. Good morning, Dawn.
I'm going to be try it now. Is it the right button?
There you go.
Okay. Here we are.
Yay.
About that, and I included a couple of slides in here. You've seen these before in our previous presentations, but keeping it in the record and for folks that might not have heard about this project, this provides an overview of Woods Creek Sustainability Center as well. So the map on the left shows the facilities of the Woods Creek Hydro Project, and the map on the right shows the general location of where we're going to build out this Education Sustainability Center. UD owns about 100 acres in this general vicinity, and we're focused on the 10 acres in the circled yellow. The purpose of the Sustainability Center hasn't changed. It's really to focus an opportunity to educate our staff and the public on how natural environments can work with built environments for a sustainable future. And I think you've all been to Woods Creek. It's a beautiful site to really message that story and inspire people to be sustainable in their own lives. Here's an overview map of the kind of different areas that we're focused on and what we're focusing our enhancements about. The green ones are more the outdoor components, and the blue circles are the more building structure components that Shelby will be talking about in the future. One of the new things, and again, Shelby will talk about this, is the outdoor shelter, a pavilion-like structure. We hadn't planned for that previously, but given budget considerations moving in the future and the complications associated with that, we've kind of had to pivot a little bit with our schedule and our ambitions, and the shelter helps do that. So outdoor enhancements, what we did in 2023 is pretty substantive in that we're still making progress in our food forest. We always do weed management, invasive weed management, for the property areas that we actively work on, especially in that northeast corner. There are a lot of blackberry growth, and so cleaning that up and prepping it for future plantings and restoration. We continued to do program planning and permit planning, doing critical areas review and mitigation planning, including site planning work associated with that. And then the food forest. We expanded a little bit of the irrigation system to incorporate two of the tree guilds that we planted. A tree guild is a community of plants that work together to support that main structure tree. And in our case with the food forest, those plantings help develop food sources. You know, we planted with apple around those main apple trees, but then there's also carrots and radish and pollinator plants and plants that bring nutrient cycling into the soils and insectiaries keep pests away. And so they work together to really amplify the fruit tree there. And then
I love your little diagrams with each plant identified by some different symbol.
Mm-hmm. That was done by our facilities folks, Brian and Bill.
Just yeah.
The blackberries.
No blackberries here.
Oh,
That's the ones we were removing in a different section. Yeah.
Dirty word.
they're good in certain locations, but not everywhere. And then we also created a compost area where we can put our grass clippings and that has fallen to the ground. Use later. We've also hosted many volunteer days, including four volunteer days that focused on the food forest. Probably about 30 different individuals helped, both PUD employees, their families, friends, and general public came out to help on these events, doing plantings around those tree guilds, weeding the various areas, and then also harvesting the fresh produce that's there. We were able to pick 250 pounds of fresh produce, and that was donated to our local food banks in Snohomish and in Sultan. And as the food forest matures and those plants that the trees that we planted a couple years ago, as those mature, we'll be able to increase that number over time and provide more fresh food for community, and all that work is done through volunteer. We've also purchased some new picnic tables for the site. These are 100% recycled plastic tables, and we also have some benches that we're going to place in the food forest area. And we've created some draft language that we've handed over to our corporate communications department to help start developing signage. And the picture on the right is a mock-up of one of those signs.
How sturdy are those benches?
They're very sturdy.
They're super heavy. This recycled plastic is really dense and really, yeah.
Okay, great.
Sturdy. And they actually have quotes on them too from environmental.
Oh, really?
Very nice. Yeah.
I think the picnic tables themselves were like 450 pounds.
Oh,
so we don't have to worry about them getting snatched in the middle of the night.
Nope.
I mean, they'd have to earn it to take those away from the site. Battery might be going dead here. We've also hosted several site visits, including school field trips, really focused on that middle school through early college stages. We posted about 6 so far this year. We had our first neighbor day out there, so inviting the local neighborhood to participate and see the site. Many of them came and expressed gratitude that they got to see it, and they had a couple of them mentioned that they thought the Benston Food Forest was going to become a dog park, and so they're very happy to hear that it was not a dog park.
It is.
No, it's not. They thought it was, and so when they got to see it and talk to us firsthand, they were very pleased to know that it was for food donation. And then we also hosted our first Hydro Appreciation Day out at Woods Creek, and it was well attended. We had about 100 folks attend, and we're looking forward to this year and expanding that. So what we're planning to do outside for the outdoor enhancements next year coming up is continue with our weed management, work with CorpCom to update our website with additional information on the food forest. When we did bring people on site, a lot of them expressed interest in doing a tree guild in their own backyard and wanted to use our plans because it kind of fits with what they already had. And so we're hoping to build out the website a little bit more about what is a food forest, and here are some examples of what you can do. And then also program planning. As I mentioned, budget is a consideration over the next few years. And so how can we readjust things moving forward, but still make progress so we can set ourselves up for the future? A lot of...
Excuse me, on the critical area study, does the county already have a critical area ordinance or anything like that?
They do, yes. So We've done our study and identified wetlands and buffers and making sure that if we're doing an activity in that area, we're properly mitigating for it. And in our case, we're contemplating increasing buffers around certain property.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. We're also going to focus again planning efforts internally on what we can do for planting in 2025 so we can build that into our budget cycle next year. And then also finalize the signage development. So again, they're ready to go to print and we can purchase and install in 2025. Continue with our site visits. Those are very popular. One of the new things with the volunteer days for 2024 is we're going to pre-identify what those days are and get them on the calendar so people can schedule around that. There's been a lot of interest expressed, but when we're only doing 1 or 2 weeks advance notice, people already have plans. And so we're gonna test out, okay, if we predefine, will that work with when we need things to happen, or is that too much advance planning? We're continuing with the field trips and working with the educators about bus scholarship. So to encourage more students that might not be able to attend, to be able to attend through bus scholarships through schools. Again, with the educators, we're planning designated days for a scout day on a weekend, and then a weekday homeschoolers day. So we can have a lot of these smaller groups all in one. Instead of spreading them out.
Excuse me, could there be an incentive that they'll get a badge for this? One of their standard badges.
Yeah, there, with scouts, there are so many. I was just talking to somebody this morning, there's so many opportunities for the PUD to engage with the scouts because of all the different merit badges they require, whether they're natural resources, sustainability, environmental science, engineering, energy supply. There's probably about 20 different badges that we could cover.
Get to those scout leaders. And are you working, sorry to interrupt again, are you working with your education department?
Yes.
Your, on the homeschooler's day and stuff.
Yeah, all of this stuff here, we work with Jenny Lamarca and Heather Herbs in Port Complex Education.
Right.
Yeah, they're very passionate about this.
Maybe you've already done this or thinking about it, but it'd be kind of nice for the homeschoolers too to have a little medallion or a badge or something, you know, to take home. That kind of helps spread the word.
Something I can talk with Jenny and Heather about.
Just a thought.
And
oh, I was going to say, I will say that bus scholarships are huge. I know from my own experience that being your challenge in field trips is trying to not pass too much cost on to parents for school buses.
Right.
So
oh, yeah.
It's a pretty big barrier.
That's what the educators said too. It prohibits a lot of schools from participating, especially if you don't have an affluent parent-teacher organization that can support the buses. You're really relying on what the school budget has, and it's often not enough for field trips.
Yeah. Years ago, Community Transit would offer free bus rides to classrooms. And they all took, so they, everyone had that field trip.
Yeah.
It was free, and they could, you know.
And that's so important. Prior to that, actually, the school districts would provide the buses for projects I was working on.
Yeah.
So that's a whole lot different than today.
Very expensive.
And then Hydro Appreciation Day, we already have it on our calendars for May 18th, 2024, and we are looking forward to expanding on it based on what we've learned from this year's event. And really want people out there to see the site and learn from a variety of staff, tradespeople, engineers, biologists, all participate. And then now I'm going to pass it over to Shelby to talk about the built components.
All right. So in 2023, the activities that we had with the building, we did a cost estimate, a pre-designed timing and budget for the building. So this is the main structure that's currently existing on the Woods Creek facility. And looking at that, we sent it out to a consultant and we worked with inner facilities department with our principal architect, Mark Herbman, and we sent it out to ProDims and we got back some feedback on the budget and decided that yes, it was a little bit more than we thought. So we pivoted and we're going to reevaluate the building requirements for the commercial use further in the future. But the cost estimate and prelim design for the outdoor shelter is kind of where we've directed our focus now. And let's see what that entails. So this was, I guess, taking us back. This was the building enhancement concept that we were looking at. So basically taking the existing structure and doing a complete renovation of the existing 3,200 square feet of residential structure and converting it to a commercial meeting space that would include multi-purpose space, break room, office space, an outdoor covered deck, restrooms. So that's kind of the concept there. Like I said, it was a little bit more than we anticipated, so we decided to shelf this for right now and pivot. And we're looking at there, next one. Oh, I'll let you do it. So now we're looking at a covered pavilion structure. This would be something that could be put up. It wouldn't have to have, you know, fire suppression, all that kind of stuff. We still would have it be ADA accessible on the site. So we're kind of looking at, there's a grassy area kind of up past the gravel area that exists in front of the house structure. We put this out there kind of where the picnic tables are currently. And then those picnic tables could go under this, but this would just be a nice covered area for, you know, inclement weather that we always have here in the Northwest. It would be a lot reduced cost option for us to do.
Was the structure always in the plan for this? Or I just don't remember when this was first.
Yeah, the concept was really to take the existing house, the structure that's currently there, and convert it into a meeting space, like a, you know, so that was the idea, and looking at all of that to bring it up to a commercial grade meeting space just wasn't quite in the budget for this So we kind of decided, well, we still want to have a space for people to meet and be able to gather here and make it very useful. So this is kind of where we're heading. And so in 2024, we're going to continue to do cost estimates on this, looking at different vendors and purchasing contracts in order to get this in place. And we plan to basically get this built in the next year.
Now that's meeting space that the community can use.
Yes.
On the concept. Well, you'll rent it out for community meetings. Oh, no. Okay.
Don may be able to talk to more about
yeah,
the program.
Yeah,
Tony's looking for that revenue.
Maybe that's out of the paper building. I'll take that back to the team. No, we because this is a operating hydro facility, safety and security is top concern. And then also we want to keep it low impact. We don't want to disturb the neighbors too much, you know. And so we want to make it available to the public when we're with them.
With them.
Yeah. So site visits, Hydro Appreciation Day, maybe in the future, again, working with public educators to provide a space for teacher workshops or a summer camp during the day for kids. So this provides, you know, cover for the, you know, sunshine and the rain moving forward, but it would need to be a guided, not open.
Got it.
In general.
Thank you.
So how much of this is in the 2024 budget?
The shelter, we have money in the budget for the shelter and some staff time. That was it for the presentation.
It's beautiful. It's a beautiful environment. It's great. Love it.
Awesome. Thank you, Dawn. Thank you, Shelby. Okay, next up is an update on our carbon solutions rate change. Sherry Miller and Shelly Patterson. Good morning.
Morning. I'm Sherry Miller. I'm a customer and energy services program manager. And with me is Shelly Patterson, my manager, senior manager for strategic partnerships.
Hey. Oh, there we go.
There's a little delay.
So the purpose of the presentation is to request future approval from the commission to increase the carbon solutions rate or price of one renewable energy credit REC from $4.50 to $6.50. It's not working. Okay. So there's the RCW 19.29A.090, and Carbon Solution exists solely to meet this RCW requirement. And it states that each electric utility must provide to its customers a voluntary option to purchase qualified alternative energy resources, and that all the costs and benefits associated with any option offered by the utility must be allocated to the customers who voluntarily chose that option and may not be shifted to any customers who have not chosen the option. Okay, a little bit about the program history. Excuse me. The program launched in 2018, and our customer enrollment has grown 65% since then. And about two-thirds of the program participants are commercial and industrial customers, and the other third are residential. And the price for one REC, or 1,000 kilowatt hours, has been $4.50, and that has not changed since the beginning of the program. And at the time I put the PowerPoint together, about 4,700 RECs had been purchased this year through the program, and I expect that by the end of the year, it will be about 6,000. And then the REC sales year after year have averaged about a 10% increase. So it's steadily growing. So the reason for the proposed rate change is that the RCW requires that those REC costs are passed through to our customers. And the industry has changed a lot, especially in the last 6 to 10 years, and the prices have dramatically increased. So the proposed rate change or price change to $6.50 per rec is purely to adjust to current rec pricing.
Excuse me for asking, but who sets the price for the rec pricing?
So we can purchase different types of recs on the market, and we set the price, but we're supposed to pass through the costs of what we pay for those recs to the customers. Mm-hmm. So we purchase recs through different rec providers, and we have an option on different types of recs. Without getting too involved, we could purchase US recs or Pacific Northwest, and the Northwest recs are very expensive. So these are the US recs, and as the price went up on the recs, we chose to go to the US recs to not have to keep raising the prices for our customers and to give them an economical choice.
Interesting. Why are Northwest recs more?
That is a very good question. I don't know.
Okay, well, that's all right.
Yeah,
it's just interesting. Because of hydro, and because we are pretty, the whole West Coast is pretty rec conscious.
Yes, we are.
And we've all been on it for several years.
Interesting.
Might be because of less, inexpensive solar in different parts of the nation, like they're having over.
And wind. A lot of it is solar and wind.
Yeah.
I think, John, you had a comment.
Well, yeah, I think those two could impact, as well as just supply and demand. And demand is higher in this part of the country, as set by state policy in this region.
Yeah, and I think it was the interest in RECs in the last 6 to 10 years, there's a lot more interest in them. At least from customer standpoint, also drives the cost up, unfortunately.
I'm sort of surprised that we don't sell more.
More than the 6,000?
Yeah.
I think we're heading, definitely we've seen a lot of growth in the program, and as more, especially commercial customers, set goals to achieve, carbon-free.
Right.
This is a program that they've been turning to, so we've been working closely with a number of those customers to calculate how many RECs they need to purchase to offset their carbon.
Right.
And as more of them have that goal, I think we're going to see definitely this program increase.
Yeah, I used the program for several years, so to do that exact same, do a calculation, I would buy RECs, and then once the solar project came on, did the same calculation, figure out how many shares of that to buy. Just to create my car. Just surprised these 6,000 in such a huge county.
I think we'll see more
yeah.
over time.
You already have the option.
So then the next steps are for your consent agenda on December 5th, just to approve the ability for us to increase the price to match what we're paying for it. Any other questions?
No. Other questions?
I do not, but I'm wondering if we have a short break after this.
Okay, how about at 9:45?
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Carrie.
Or do you want to take that break now?
Oh, whatever. Right?
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
It'd be a too big presentation.
Okay. New coffee drinkers,
maybe. All right. Next up, Jason Wiskowski. Oh, wait a minute.
Here.
I messed up.
Peter.
Next up.
Got an important.
He's there.
Jason.
Peter Donahauer on our distribution generation rate schedule extension. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning. Peter Downhauer here from the Rates Economics Energy Risk Management Department. Here to talk about our pilot small distributed generation rate schedule extension, otherwise net billing. So the purpose of this presentation is to brief the board on the pilot background and make a recommendation to extend the pilot and update our pricing through 2024. And so that is the expectation, is to consider the contents herein, and we'll come back with the appropriate paperwork for that. All right, so the agenda, just go through a little background, talk a bit about the pilot goals and mechanics, state of the pilot, and then talk about the pricing updates. So if you remember, we have our district small renewables program. This is kind of where we started out with this pilot's rate schedule. This applies to distributed generation that's over 100 kilowatts but under 2 megawatts. And a power purchase agreement is created, and it gets renewed every 1 to 5 years. All the customer produced kWh kilowatt hours are purchased by the PED through that PPA, an annual agreement and payment process, and all the incoming power gets charged at a standard PED rate. The customer distributed generation system is then electrically separated from the distributed generation customer load. So when we adopted the pilot small distributed generation rate schedule in March 19, 2019, we started out with a pretty limited availability, meaning that there were some limitations, for example, around it being a governmental facility, tribal government, or housing authority, or 501c3. We set the pricing for all customer generation that flows to the district through that. And we had electrically connected customer load behind the meter. So we also then had a 1 year extension last year, at the end of last year.
I accidentally. Shame on you.
We'll have to start over.
Start over.
Down here.
No.
Okay, you just finished saying that electrically connected to the customer load.
So
I thought.
Yes. So last year we came back end of the year 2022 and renewed some of the pricing. We also updated the availability, the eligibility, removing the requirement of being a governmental facility, tribal organization, housing authority, or 501c3. All right. There we go. And the pilot goals were to address the customers, solar customers, really that had more than 100 kilowatts nameplate, and their desires to net their consumption with their generation. Objective was to test a net billing model, which would help keep the district financially balanced. And it enhances also our district's forward-looking community-based solutions, so we can research mid-size distributed generation solutions, the data collection, the analysis, and also to simplify and interconnection process and design for this particular size range. Also, with the original formulation to enhance some low-income community support as those initial projects were really interested in that.
Peter, what does that mean, financially balanced? Does that mean neutral to us?
What I would say is, as an alternative to, for example, net metering, this allows us to control the prices that are reflective of our costs. So we're not favoring in any way any production that happens. So these are a couple of slides just about the metering layout, really just for reference, but our small renewable program metering layout would have a export meter and an import meter, or we might measure separately a certain amount of kilowatt hours that flow through there. Very similar with the net billing construct, using a bi-directional meter. In this case, we know what's going in and what's going out, and we'd be able to price the value of that accordingly. All right, I'm not just pausing for fun. I'm actually clicking madly behind here. I don't know if you can hear the clicking, but.
Do it for you.
All right. So as far as our current participants, initially Hope Works was the first participant. Also, we've brought on Berkshire Housing, Catholic Housing Services. Both are 65-unit low-income apartments. In case of Catholic Housing Services, low-barrier apartments. Common areas, some commercial spaces. Both of them had a net zero goal and were tied to state funding for the projects. Really happy to provide a type of rate for these particular customers in the pilot to see how it works out for them. Both are in the sort of upper range there, the 100 to 200 kilowatts, just under 200 kilowatts, same installer. Like I said, there was a desire for both of them to consume the kilowatt hours generated on site.
Do you have any idea how they're doing relative to their goal?
I don't have that answer, but this is something that we are looking at as we think about next steps for this net billing pilot to move it to a full-fledged rate, a permanent rate. This is something that we'll be looking at this next year. However, I can say that at times we have been purchasing the power that's been produced through the net billing rates, and this is kind of a graph that shows that for both entities. Their names may be a little bit anonymous, but over the period of time from 2019 to last month here, they've been credited combined $38,000. We've had some additional interest by a car dealership and a health department to join this. And really would be quite interested to see their experience too, one of the reasons why we can extend the pilot. We should extend the pilot as far as our recommendation goes, is to continue to gather more experiences beyond just the two original pilots participants there.
So to follow up on Commissioner Logan's question, does the fact that the entity number one has saved more than entity two, does that reflect what you were asking about in terms of tracking how successful they are?
So this would be the credits that are being provided to those entities, and so that would be excess generation during those hourly intervals, right? So you'd be able to look at this here and seeing that entity one definitely has some bigger bars, particularly in 2023, saying that they are either using less electricity, energy during those periods of times, or generating more solar, probably generating pretty similar year on year. And it's probably a consumption question, maybe consuming less. It's also related to the prices that changed throughout those years. So we've been updating the prices every year. And 2023 had some pretty significantly higher prices than previously, as we'll see in the next slide. And so it's the combination of those two things. If you can just compare entity one to entity two, yeah, you would say that. Okay. Back on. Thank you. As far as the rate making notes, what we did is we looked at the different components that we could provide credits, forecasted energy market as we look forward, and we do those forecasts, what we expect prices will be like next year. We look at local delivery savings, which would be avoided costs from transmission and distribution as a result of this. And we also look at generation.
We are resuming. It is now 10:05 a.m. On November 21st, and we're resuming after some technical issues. So we'll now proceed with Peter Downhour. Go ahead, Peter.
All right, Peter Downhour here, Senior Manager of Rates, Economics, Energy Risk Management. Are we going to begin at the start, or shall we start where we left off?
We were on slide 10.
Slide 10.
I think we should start where we left off.
Yeah.
Got it. It would be great to be careful.
All right, back to the rate making notes. What we do when we build this rate is we look at the different pricing components where we can give value to customers for the energy produced at different times of year, so it's seasonal. And these components are, as far as the energy that gets produced, but we look at the forecasted energy and we update that as we get new forecasts and our planning models change as well. We look at the local delivery savings, a smaller component, but this would be things like transmission and distribution, what it costs, and generation peaking credits. So really during those peaking moments when we're providing energy at that time is particularly valuable. You can see that's coming up in the summertime when the sun is on, solar panels are producing energy, and not during the winter times. And this is a unique and interesting part of this particular type of resource, right? We do have peaking needs in the wintertime, but this this rate provides the credits for the summertime because it is solar only. So this is to say that we provide power for all of these items here, and then we seasonalize them for proposed new rates. And so when we look at, particularly seasonalizing means we put them into seasons and we also normalize within the season so we don't have a $1 difference between August and July, for example. The graph up at the top, you'd see that there are some differences between months. We make it a little more simple.
Thank you for that. I didn't understand.
Yeah.
It's interesting how much benefit we get in September.
Yeah. So September can be a tough month. And as far as peaking credits, we definitely get some credits, and there's some energy produced quite a bit in September. Exactly. So when we come out to just one quick thing on the previous slide, so when we look at our proposed rates down at the bottom there, we can also compare those to historically. So when we first proposed this pilot, we had 2019 to 2022 prices built in. Last time we came back to the commission last December, we updated it for 2023. See, we changed around some of the seasonal months there. These happen to coincide with a regional adequacy kind of framework in view of needs. So this would be RAT. So these kind of coincide with the RAT months and updated the pricing as well. And you can see last year we had some pretty significant summer prices, $15 per $15, whereas the 2024 proposed prices are a little bit less in the summertime, coming out to 10 cents a kilowatt hour. Excuse me, that should be 10 cents a kilowatt hour dollars. Sorry, that's just a typo there. So one thing that I wanted to do was look at the kind of five-year revenue expectations. If everything was held constant, just to give a sense of, if you had a almost 0.2 megawatt, 200 kilowatt system, PV system in the pilot, and we look at the next 5 years, and like I said, nothing changed. Now we know the prices are likely going to change next year. We're going to have a pricing update. And as we have changes to our planning models, we might change some of the other values that go into that, the capacity credits that are offered and so forth. And so this is a perspective look at what you might be able to get. The other thing is, this assumes as well that the all of the energy that gets produced actually goes to the PD. It's all exported, and as we saw in the previous slide, that's not true. Systems are mostly meant to cover the consumption on a yearly basis and not overbuilt. But so this, all of these potential revenues wouldn't necessarily come to customers also consuming half of their energy, right? And so nonetheless, this is useful to look at. And so the final value is up to about $40,000. And you can see where it kind of accumulates as well, mostly in the heavy hour energy that gets produced, that would be during the daytime hours. There's peaking credits that are being applied mostly during the summertime. In fact, the energy value is mostly during the summertime and then quite significantly less during the winter periods where the solar generation is quite a bit less. There's a very small local distribution slice in there. And if you're wondering, there's no REC value associated with this. This is something that we're looking to see if we want to include in the future to give customers an option to get a REC value. Require some additional consideration, though.
I might have missed it. Why did the energy value drop so much in the last 2 years?
So when we look at the energy forecasts, you didn't miss it because it wasn't explained.
Okay.
But I'm glad you pointed it out. When we look at the energy forecast, we look at some of the market quotes, and we also combine this with our longer term price forecasts. And so it's a blend of these things, and our market quotes really run out in that at the end of 2026.
But as we get closer to those years, of course, have more data, and we can adjust the rate.
Yeah, it's not entirely dependent on the market forecast in the next year.
Okay.
And the values, it is a blended value, a bit more conservative. So it's blended value.
And my other question, I guess this is a good time to need to ask it, is a car dealership, for instance. So I would guess that's going to be a different profile.
Mm-hmm.
And we have thoughts about how that will help or hurt us relative to the residential profiles. Or
well, when we look at like a car dealership or other profiles, when we look at the generation that gets produced as a solar only generation, it is actually pretty predictable. Which is really what's the proportion of that gets consumed by the customer at what time?
Right. I guess that's what I was wondering. The assumption.
Yeah, well, it's going to be up to the customer there on what it is. So we will see what we'll see, and this is why we need to get some more data back as well, other profiles.
Sure.
We have sort of simplified there's no kind of time of day element here. There's a heavy load versus light load value component. But when it comes to offering the bill credit, it at the end of the day, if we look at how much was exported to the PUD and have a single price during that month at which the credits are accrued, right? And so there's a big simplification that's really based off of the solar profile and the likelihood that they're going to be overproducing when the sun is up and there's lots of solar production and not producing at all during winter times. Okay, next slide, please. So the recommendation is to extend the existing pilot for a year. We want to update our prices as shown in the presentation to reflect the current market conditions and our latest planning assumptions incorporated into them all. And we want to continue to evaluate the role of the pilot, just recognizing that there are some that net metering may complement and be an alternative to net metering. So ongoing legislation on net metering, we'd like to see how that works out and how this might fit within our goals to provide customers value. I think that's it. Next slide.
So you've noted two other dealership and health.
Yeah.
Do you anticipate what's the time frame that you anticipate they might move forward? Just in general, 2024, 2025.
I think I understand that 2024 might be a possibility, but okay. I don't have any further details on that. If you get that information,
I don't want any details.
Yeah, we're hoping that's as possible. So
okay.
For the sake of the pilot, getting more customers
absolutely
in there, so
yeah,
that we can get data, their experience, get feedback, and really think about how we get this to the point where we have more permanent it's a good time to wait, as I said, because we would like to see where the net billing legislation lands and how we position this accordingly.
Complicated net billing business.
Net billing, net metering, yep, it's a big topic of discussion that I'm talking about now, I guess.
To be continued.
To be continued.
Sure.
Yes.
Yes. Any more questions?
I don't have any.
So the vision is to end up with a permanent rate schedule that would be open to everybody eventually.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep, absolutely. And so we, you know, this next year we'll have time to, again, like I said, look at how it fits in with net metering. We'll get more data, but also to think about the systems that need to go into place so that things like how we scale up billing from a manual process to a more automated process, so forth. Evaluate, for example, the having a rec adder as an option for a customer. These types of things. So I anticipate next year coming back with some more analysis on that as well.
Do you think that this program tends to encourage or discourage residential customers from getting more solar?
Well, this is only available for customers that are between 100 and 200 kilowatt hours, so it's not really available for residential customers.
Would you repeat that?
It's not really available for residential customers, which systems tend to be far smaller, in the sort of 10 kilowatt range.
Yes.
It's 10 times the size, quite a bit larger.
Okay. I remember you had that on one of the slides, but I have people in my district who are very pro-solar, as you know,
or right.
Maybe you remember, and I just want to make sure that we're encouraging more solar, if that's what people want to do.
Yeah, so I think we can maybe delay a little bit of that commentary to what we talked about and how the IRP might look at encouragement of solar. I also think, you know, how do we offer air rates that keep rates low for everyone and still offer solar customers the value which we can. I think that billing is a good construct for that, what we've done with this pilot. And I think that if we were to consider net billing versus our current net metering construct, we should and will look at, you know, how it impacts existing customers and how that may or may not incentivize customers at the residential level. We haven't yet done that analysis here.
Okay.
It would seem like too, when Connect Up is fully implemented, that we'll have probably a lot more data to understand the existing solar customers and how it benefits or impacts the system.
Yeah, absolutely. We're gonna have tons of data.
Good morning, commissioners. This is Doug O'Donnell, PED, Senior Executive Account Managers. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, some great questions. And to your question, Commissioner Wolf, does this support and promote solar definitely from a commercial perspective? We've got a lot of roofs out there that'll support just under 200 kW of solar. And so the car dealership, they're actually getting up and running. And so we should have data on them, but it really supported them. The big issue for a lot of these folks is philosophically, they're producing on site. They really want to consume on site. I think we can all understand that driver and that philosophical need. This is a Volvo dealership, the car dealership. They're going all electric, so it's a part of their whole package of branding. A couple other questions that came up that I can help clarify before we go is on the consumption and the numbers on the graph that Peter showed with the participant one and participant two. These are the income qualified projects. Participant one, that is a training program. It's folks who live in these small, super high efficient apartments who are responsible for their own PUD utility bills. And so the part of their training is to bear that responsibility. So we're seeing a price signal there where they're really aware of their consumption. The second participant is it's a no barrier housing facility. This is basically people who would otherwise be homeless on the streets. And in that case, the clientele is not quite at a level where they're able to manage their own utility costs. So in that case, the organization Catholic Housing Services pays all the utility bills. So we're seeing a price signal there. And also, because these folks are really, you know, on hard times, they spend a lot more time at home, so the power's on a lot more. But it's really a great program to be engaged in. The state funded these projects through Washington State Department of Commerce to really test with could ultra energy efficient housing, small apartment units built, you know, to state of the art, be supported by rooftop solar? And right now the answer is not quite. And there are this variable of responsibility is a huge price signal that I don't think anyone fully appreciated when it came on. So that's it. Thank you for your time.
Anyone? Who was the speaker?
It was Doug O'Donnell. Key accounts, Doug O'Donnell.
Oh, okay. Good.
Thanks, Doug. So our next steps would then be to return to the commission December 5th. We're at a rates hearing where we'll be putting forth an extension to the pilot rate schedule through 2024 and to update our pricing for 2024. Any other questions?
I don't know. Thank you. Great conversation.
Thank you.
Thank
That's
you.
Not easy to make all of that comprehensible to us. Good job.
Good job, Peter.
Thank you.
In spite of all the delays, pretty efficient. Thank you, Doug, for your comments. Okay, next up is Jason Zaskowski to introduce our 2023 IRP overview.
Yes. All right. Thank you, John. Good morning, commissioners. Just wanted to say a few quick things before the team hops up here. And first off, just a great job to the team on this IRP. It is a significant IRP update for us, and that it includes our electrification load forecast. And they've done a great job on doing the analysis and the work to develop the action plan. And the thing I really wanted to highlight here is that, you know, historically in the past, Garrison has really led the IRP effort, done a lot of the analysis, a lot of the writing of the document. And so has Ian Hunter. He's also been very involved in writing the document. And this year, Chris and Landon really leading the analysis, and Chris, a lot of that work as well in the writing of the document, have really been the team doing a lot of the work to put this together. And two things there. One, you know, just a great job by Garrison and Ian in training up the team and developing this new duo to lead the way on the IRP, and then a great job by Landon and Chris, both stepping up to the plate and taking on the work and doing an excellent job. So just want to say great job to the team, and I'm excited about the IRP and the transition and the development that we're seeing of the new folks. So with that, I will turn it over to Garrison.
All right, well, I'm Garrison Marr, the Senior Manager of Power Supply. Thank you, Jason, for the kind words. And it is true, this is really gonna be a Landon and Chris production today, and it really has been for this whole year. They've been working on this product, and maybe just to brag a little bit, they've also been supporting Eugene Water and Electric Board as they look to develop their IRP processes. So these guys are so good. They're doing ours, and they're supporting other peers in the region, and they just do a great job.
That's where Brian Booth went, right?
It is, and that is the connection, of course.
I just wanted to mention, because to me, this is a sign of developing and the talent that you've got in the departments. And and depth and expertise to our customers.
Absolutely. You did a great job, and I'm really excited about what's next. But we do have to talk about what's here. Yeah. You guys probably think that we're just craving attention coming to you so frequently with these IRP briefings, but it really is in the interest of transparency and wanting to really provide the commission and the public with a sequential process so they can see how the analysis was done, what the results were, and what is a result of those resource strategy results that BUD will need to do next to position itself for the future.
And this includes the board's responsibilities for due diligence, because I was looking at the number of presentations, and it is, it's good for our public.
So, we do have some new content for you today, potentially the last new content for you for this IRP cycle. We'll do a little bit of review just so we have the right context for this audience to process that. The last part of the IRP, the resource strategy, which was shared in the October briefing, which says this is the long-term plan that we need to start implementing. The new information today is going to be about the action plan, which is the near-term actions that we will need to take as the PUD to get that resource strategy. This is something that the commission directs staff to make progress on. So it's an important part of this commission-staff relationship. And we'll spend the bulk of our time today talking about that action plan. Since we last talked, we also had an open house with our customers in November, the first part of the month, just to get additional feedback from them. We've made some presentations to community groups for their feedback. We also have a SEPA process, State Environmental Policy Act, where there's an additional opportunity for comment. That process closes out today. We have not received any comment through that, but it's all part of our effort to be robustly transparent and to work with and for our customers to make sure that we have a responsible plan. So that is all the prelude to the show that Chris and Landon will be delivering here. The agenda is right before you here. Landon will start with a bit of a refresher. Chris will deliver the action plan, which is the new material. And we are geared up to come back to commission December 5th for a resolution to adopt the 2023 IRP update, which will also include a resolution for the biennial conservation target, which is the two-year conservation acquisition goal that we will set for ourselves, in which the state will absolutely audit us to make sure that we've achieved. Our team does a great job of doing that. So I'll hand it off to Landon now and just really appreciate your time through this year of work together.
All right. Thank you, Garrison. Good morning, Commission. I'm Landon Snyder. I'm an analyst in the power supply team for our long-term planning section. And this right here is the timeline that we've been living for the last, call it 12 or so months. And in case you were wondering where we are now, there's a nice arrow pointing right at the end of phase five, which is the very tail end of things. And so let's get going on where we've been so far and what we've done. So we started out phase one, which answers the question really of what do we want to study? So that's low base and high load growth cases or scenarios. And then we did some analysis of the Bonneville load following product. And then from there we go to phase two, which is really trying to look at that that question of you know, like what's our need, right? So really, Jason alluded to it, that there's a lot of electrification coming out. We have very considerable at both energy and capacity needs that the current portfolio doesn't reach. So we need to do something about that. And what do we do about it, right? So that's what phase three looks to find options out there, demand side, supply side options. So we look at low cost conservation, demand response, rates programs, and then we develop a supply side menu. So that's your actual physical resources out there that we would go out and procure or build. Next. To go to phase four. And this is really graphs that we've showed in the last presentation, but this graph shows our forecast energy need with that red line at the fifth percentile, right? So, and the shaded area is the resource stack that we, resources that we don't have today, new resource additions that we don't have today, but we'll need to acquire or build in the future in order to keep, to meet this metric. So that's the energy need. And this is the same resource stack that shows the capacity. So this is really, again, same general concept. It's the same resource built out of a mix of resources as seen to keep that line met, right, at that same fifth percentile, so call it 1 in 20 years. All right. So, and there we go to the big resource strategy graph that we've seen before. So this graph shows the resource strategy over the full 20-year study period. And again, the different color shaded areas show new resource additions that the PUD does not have today, but will need to incrementally acquire over the years to come so that we can cost effectively serve our customers. Right, briefly, we need a new energy efficiency. Right? We need new utility scale renewables, new Bonneville products, and specifically Bonneville Tier 2, which we'll talk about in just a moment, new batteries, new demand response and smart rates programs, but also in the short term, in the very near term, we need some short-term structured market contracts, about 50 megawatts worth, so we can use that as a bridge until we can get those actual resources online. And then also, we looked at and found potentially cost-effective a very limited scale of new technologies, such as small modular reactors, SMRs, or fusion, for the last handful, the last 5 or so years of the study period. Of course, we do IRPs every couple years, so that means we'll have several more IRPs completed by the time the 2040s start getting closer to reality as time moves forward. This also tracks with feedback given to us by our customers regarding their want for clean energy supply to serve their load. So now we're going to look at the next slide here, which is it's the same slide as before, but scaled down a little more granularly for the next 10 years. Generally, you can see how and when, or sort of when and how much of each resource type comes into being. Three important things to note here. So first, there's about 200 megawatts, that's the green there, of new renewables that we need to acquire. And these really just replace our current utility scale renewables with shinier newer ones. So our current contracts are Gen 1 wind down in the Columbia Gorge. And those are set to expire between the years of 2024 and 2029. They kind of cascade expire. Second point, Bonneville Tier 2 will likely play an important role in our upcoming long-term BPA contract. So we forecast to be eligible for Tier 2 for the first time ever in 2029, and that it seems to be a cost-effective addition to our portfolio. Next, you'll see under that little circle there under 2025, under total cumulative EE or energy efficiency, Garrison kind of alluded to that. That's our binding biennial target that we must reach and will reach. Next, I talked a little bit about this in the previous slide about how we looked at the Bonneville product, the load following product, which we don't have today. We are a block and slice customer. So what we did was we looked at a load following solutions, various costs of it compared to a block and slice solution, and even with the different costs that we looked at, even with the most call it beneficial or the most from the load following perspective, the most cost effective solution of load following, which is kind of that far right one, a block and slice solution is still a better value for us. But this is based off of what we know today, right? So it's very important that this could change as the post 2028 BPA discussion process continues to move forward. So there's still a possibility that load following product could be the right fit for us in the future as we learn more over the next year and a half through the post 2028 process.
Right, and thank you for doing this work. And this is the questions I've had since I got on the commission. So it really helps to understand it, put it in perspective. Thank you.
You're welcome, and do it alone, team effort. So next we get to.
I just wanted to add that I think it's very challenging time to be sure about a lot of this. And before I forget, the wind is expiring. I've raised the question before.
So we made those contracts back in 2008, seven. It was a very long time ago, and they had an expiration date when we got them.
Right, but could there be new contracts or extensions?
And that's part of the due diligence process.
Because at Energy Northwest, they're talking about some of their other than just nuclear, tremendous part of what they're doing.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that, maybe a little bit in this slide. So let's, all right. So
say hold your horses.
All right. So if phases one was, you know, what are we going to study? And phases two through four are the highly mathematical and modeling phases, which, and also some research in there too. And phase five is where we create this data-driven, flexible resource strategy based on all those results. So briefly, the three bullet points up there, right? So first bullet point, we want to make sure we get the best possible BPA contract out there at 75-80% of our power portfolio any given year. Very important that that contract is good for us. We want to pursue a diverse set of new resource additions, again, resources that we don't have today, as shown in the second bullet point, regardless of which BPA product we end up having. So what I'm saying there is those five bullet points under actively pursue cross-product resource additions are things that we want to do regardless of which Bonneville product we end up going with. And third, kind of in that same Bonneville ballpark, we want to make a resource strategy that is nimble. So if that these BPA product dynamics change as we learn more, we want that resource strategy to be able to adapt. So for example, certain resources in the future may or may not end up being cost-effective additions for us in a load-following universe. That product fundamentally changes the math of some resources. So we want to make sure that anything we add now ends up fitting if we end up being a different Bonneville type. Okay. And then that kind of fits a little bit with the idea of wind. So the idea is that renewables, it fundamentally changes the mass. So when we go out and potentially acquire a renewable in a load following universe, it may or may not be cost effective in a load following scenario.
And BPA is dealing with the same questions right now too, aren't they? As to whether they're going to take advantage of new markets, more renewables, possibly all of that is connected to what we're doing.
Absolutely.
Maybe it's obvious.
Yeah, no, no, that's absolutely correct. You know, anything that Bonneville does absolutely affects us.
That's just, what does nimble mean?
Nimble.
What? You know where I'm going. Nimble is really being very close to moving some projects forward.
Right.
During that period, you're going to have to rely. Is that nimble?
Nimble, flexible, the idea that we don't want to put, in my eyes, too much into something if the Bonneville product we end up selecting ends up being different, right? So, for example, going on pursuing wind right now, and then if we end up looking at a load-following universe, that wind becomes significantly less cost-effective and might be a burden. That's kind of my
thought. Might include market purchases?
I guess it could. Yeah, I didn't think about that one.
Yeah.
You want to take that one?
Continuing the due diligence, continuing to study, and be poised and ready to take advantage of whatever the best option is for the circumstances now and how they look in the future.
But in the last short period of time, market has not been that.
Try to be as nimble as possible in real time. To flex with those markets. With the IRP, we're trying to be nimble short term, but also long term, which a lot of that is, again, and Harrison and Landon can say it much better than I, but it's continuing to do the study. Even when we're not in a specific IRP process, we're always monitoring and assessing how those things are changing and what that impacts, how that impacts us.
Some things are shifting
forward. Yeah. A lot of things in play.
Yeah, okay.
So not to lock in, I guess, until we have to.
Yes.
Just to be clear, on the previous slide, you saw market. This was not like the short-term day-ahead market. This was like structured market contracts with the counterparty ahead of time, just to clarify there. Now I'm done with the review, and Chris is here to present the action plan, so I'm gonna turn it over to him. where he's going to talk about the specific list of things that staff will do in order to make progress on this resource strategy.
Good morning. I got to bring this thing down. Landon's a lot taller than I am. Good morning, commissioners. I'm Chris Scudder. I'm an analyst in the supply and power supply department. I'm going to talk to you about the action plan. So these are the things that you as commission are directing us as staff to do. The 2023 IRP has a significantly larger action plan than maybe you're used to in past IRPs. And that's because of those needs that Landon identified going forward. We've got a big Bonneville contract negotiation that's ongoing. We have electrification and electric vehicle load forecast to worry about, and a couple ongoing projects that really need to be brought home. So this is going to be a bigger action plan than you might be used to. We've kind of broken our action plan here into three buckets or three categories. We have our implementation, which is our do now actions. Those are actions that are either ongoing and need to be finished or designed to be completed in the short term. We have due diligence and preparation, which is information gathering, maybe longer term actions being prepared as we go forward into this resource strategy. And finally, continuous improvement, which is things that we're really good at now, but in the spirit of the company's continuous improvement goals, we want to do better at doing better. So, first one I'm going to talk about here is our implementation. So these are the do now. We want to actively engage with the BPA post-2020 contract. The 2020 contract is critically important to the PUD's future position and requires continued strong engagement from staff. Staff has been active to date at all levels across the district, and will need to continue to be so going forward. Once the Bonneville Power products are known, we can do analysis on best fit products for the PUD, and we'll need to analyze those products to make an informed decision. We need to adopt our biennial conservation targets. So we have 10.54 average megawatts or more of cost-effective conservation. Energy Services has been a great partner to us through this entire process, and we really couldn't do it without them. So big shout out to Energy Services for allowing us to use conservation as such an effective resource. We're working on our time of day rates right now, in line with our previously released demand response implementation plan. So we're going to complete that in line with our Connect Up program. Part of our resource strategy here is to finish the first large battery project, our 25 megawatt battery project. You guys recently had a briefing on that back in November. So we're going to finish that up as identified in the 2021 IRP. And finally, as Landon mentioned, we're going to look to acquire 50 megawatts of short-term seasonal market contracts as a bridging strategy to get us into the later resource strategy. Those were the implementation actions.
Excuse me, short term, 2 years, 3 years, 10 years. How do you define short term?
We allow them to go out 3 years, whatever those contracts look like. Yeah. The next bucket we want to talk about is due diligence preparation. So we've consulted with Lighthouse Consulting, which provided a demand response potential assessment, or DRPA. And several low-cost DR programs were identified as having value to the PUD. So we're going to start to explore the cost-effectiveness of smart rate and equipment-based demand response programs and build a pathway forward to achieve our demand response targets. Next, we're going to perform some due diligence on some next level or the next set of batteries. So energy storage has been identified as being valuable to the PUD in several futures load following or block slice. So after we finish our 25 megawatt battery, we're going to begin preparation for the next local energy storage project by identifying sites, potential obstacles, and begin working with local jurisdictions to socialize battery resources.
So you're going to wait until 2025 to look at that?
No, we're going to start that.
It'll be ongoing.
Yeah, it's an ongoing process. The PUD's generation department has identified a potentially exciting upgrade project to our own Runner River Hydro. So we want to look at capacity enhancements to our existing projects. We're going to look at the technical feasibility, costs, and benefits of adding shaping capabilities to our Runner River Hydro. Snohomish County is home to an exciting fusion energy sector, and we want to, in the long term, we want to develop those partnerships as a community partnership with our local fusion developers. So staff will continue to monitor and develop fusion and engage with fusion developers going forward.
So a fun fact, the last peanut meeting that is a trivia question, which Pacific Northwest Utility has fusion in their IRP.
Did you get it right?
I didn't answer.
And then finally, as Landon mentioned, we have a lot of renewables going forward. So we want to perform some due diligence and to be nimble in a post-2028 environment. There's that word again, Commissioner Olson. We want to be prepared to replace our existing wind fleet as those contracts retire. So staff is going to need to perform some due diligence on potential regional renewable projects and prepare for potential procurement efforts if our Bonneville product choice dictates.
Okay, so it's procuring output. Okay.
Yep. Finally, continuous improvement. These are things that we already do well, or we have great processes for, and we want to make sure that we acknowledge the work that's been done in the past to get us to the point where we're doing as well as we are. And with a nod to continuous improvement as a continuous improvement across the district. The PUD is committed to a clean energy stance, and staff will continue to follow all clean energy mandates through the entire study period. Nod to your previous comments, Commissioner Wolf. Our customers have expressed strong interest in rooftop solar and behind the meter resources generally. So we strive to be the best in the business at working with our customers on behind the meter resources. We need to again shout out our energy services department for making those processes and procedures so effective now. And we're really proud of our processes, and we want to make sure we're staying the best in the region. Finally, this is it. This is the last thing that we get to talk about here as an action. District staff is working with our regional peers on wide area matters that affect the PUD, such as ongoing market developments, regional resource adequacy developments, and climate change forums. Staff will continue to participate in these forums and advocate for the PUD's best interests.
You know, the public can access a lot of that modeling on the PF website. And so I would urge people, if they're interested, to go to visit spnuc.org. And that's all I want to say about that. It reminded me that how much work they've done on that.
Okay. Next steps. So this is the last slide on our 2023 IRP. It feels very odd to be here, but we're going to bring a couple resolutions next commission meeting on December 5th to adopt the biennial conservation targets and the 2023 IRP update. We don't have a clean energy implementation plan this time. That's on a four-year cycle. So we're in the middle of the previous 2021 CEIP. So you should see a couple resolutions for your consent agenda next time to adopt these documents.
Fantastic.
1 year of work later, here we are. I'll open it up for any questions you have for us.
I have a question, just an observation. I believe I've stated many times that we've got to begin to move to be in terms of charge of our own destiny. And I'm glad to see that that's been recognized in some of the, in terms of growth or need, and that you're moving these things forward and you're building in the ability to alter those as maybe as maybe needed, because some of them take, they can't be done overnight. So you have to start earlier. But anyway, I'm very pleased to see that, because I have been so concerned that we will, we may continue to rely on what's worked for us, and that isn't always working for us today. And so I'm pleased to see where you're going.
Thank you. Yeah, I'll echo that same comment to not be reliant on others in the future as things get better. So, and then my question, kind of jokingly, is when do we start the next IRB?
January 1st.
That's like the budget. We're already working on 2025.
Always IRP.
Those engineers are out there working on it.
Yeah. We stop IRPing, so we'll have to do that.
Well, thank you for all of your hard work and for being able.
Thank you for bearing with us through all these presentations.
Yeah. Yeah.
Huge kudos to Harrison, Landon, and the entire team. As you all know, it's a huge lift on the ongoing IRP.
And it adds another complexity and pressure on budgets.
Yep.
How staff proceeds.
Yeah. And just our biggest opportunity, not just for us, but in the region, really the country, is resource adequacy. And of course, the IRP is the core to what our resource adequacy looks like out in the future. So it's a big, big deal.
You have anything more for us this morning?
Nope, that concludes our presentation.
Okay, it is now 10:52 a.m. and the meeting is recessed. The regular meeting will reconvene here in the commission room, meeting room at 1:30 p.m. for your lunch.